tonight we'll continue with our theme that we've been working on for several months now, which is the Noble Eightfold Path. And earlier on, some weeks ago, I gave a talk on wise intention, and I'll continue with that topic today. And so to give a little bit of context, which I do every time I talk about this, is the Noble Eightfold Path is the path that the Buddha was teaching us to attain ultimately awakening, so complete freedom from any type of suffering or difficulty. And so the Eightfold Path consists of eight steps, and I just named the eight steps just so you know. The first one is wise or right view, depending on the translator, they're using right or wise. Then wise intention, wise speech, wise action, wise livelihood, wise effort, wise concentration, and wise mindfulness. Sorry, wise mindfulness and then concentration. And so I gave also a short introduction on wise intention, so the second of those eight path factors. Last time I gave a short intro to this path factor, and I just want to repeat just a little bit of that so that you have the context of for this path factor. And so wise or right intention is about shaping the next moment. So it shapes our mental and our verbal and our bodily actions. And in that way, it's actually intertwined with the path factors that come next to it, after it. So right speech is fueled by whether your intention is right or wise or not so wise. Maybe same with action, and same action through body and action through mind. So thoughts even can have intentions behind them. And so any action is basically, whether it's through body, speech, or mind, is fueled by an intention. And so intentions are pretty important. They really shape our lives in a way. And so it's actually through our intentions that we can shape the future. And we can change the past, but we can start to shape the future. And the Buddha taught us in this, through this path factor of wise intention, that there can be wholesome ways to do that, ways that are onward leading, and ways that are not so wholesome, or that could be not so beneficial, even harmful to ourselves or to others. And so whatever intention is behind our thoughts or our speech or actions is what's going to define whether there is a wholesome or an unwholesome result, which is a very short, brief way to talk about karma, which is one of the important teachings of the Buddha. Karma is about that our intentions shape and shape our future. So the more wholesome intentions we can have, the more wholesome our future will be, or the more wholesome moments we'll have in the future. That's what karma is about. And so the Buddha described three specific wholesome intentions. He talked about the intention of renunciation, the intention of non-ill will, and the intention of harmlessness. And so if you positively frame that, then renunciation is just renunciation, letting go. And then non-ill will, you could say, is goodwill or kindness. And harmlessness we can phrase as compassion. And so I want to talk a bit more in depth today about kindness and compassion. And last time I spoke about renunciation in depth. So if you're interested in that, then it's on the website if you want to listen back to that. And so the second of the wise intentions So we got renunciation first, and then comes goodwill is the second one, or kindness, which has as the opposites ill will and anger and aversion are all kind of opposites of kindness. And so the Buddha actually often speaks in those terms of not this, not that. So non-ill will, that's how he describes it, as non-ill will. He doesn't describe it as kindness. That's kind of our Western minds who like the positive framing, who like a positive word instead of like this negative negation, I guess. And so I think actually that in this case, it can be helpful to see it as non-ill will, because it lowers the bar a little bit. Because if as long as we don't have ill will, there's the intention of non-ill will. So every time non-ill will, there's no ill will in your mind, you're having this wise intention already. So that's pretty, it can be pretty neutral. It doesn't have to be like full on, like glowing metta. So I think that's kind of encouraging in a way. And so that's, you can pay attention to that, like, oh, I actually don't have any ill will right now. Great. So I already have this wise intention. And you can also start to pay attention to when there is kindness present, or where there is the opposite present of kindness or care or goodwill in any form. And so also then you can notice, oh, wait, this right intention, wise intention of goodwill is here. And so the classic way to cultivate this wise intention is through the metta practice, the loving kindness practice that we just did tonight. And doing this practice is actually said to be an antidote to anger and to aversion. So if you're ever finding yourself in a angry mood, or you just feel kind of aversive, and you do some metta, and it's often easiest, or it works best if you do it for an easy being, because that is, then it's easier to get those juices flowing. And then you can see, does it change? Does the anger soften a little bit? Maybe it's not fully gone when you practice some metta, but there might be the edge might be taken off. And sometimes it does fully dissolve. And the proximate cause for metta, for kindness to arise, is to see the good in ourselves or in others. So especially when we do the practice, it can be helpful to actually tune into the goodness that you notice in this other being. You're taking your dog as the object of your attention, and you can see just the pure goodness that your dog is. Just, there's no harm in the dog, right? They're just them. So you can just reflect on that, and then you can automatically kind of, or it's the cause could be that could be the cause for the kindness to arise. And you can even do that with yourself, seeing your own good qualities, which is really hard for us Westerners often to see our own good qualities. But the Buddha actually encouraged that as a very wholesome way of engaging with ourselves, to also see that we have wholesome qualities, we have good qualities. And that can sometimes help to generate this, is to think of what would a friend say about us? What kind of good qualities would a friend see in us? And then go from there, because you know, it can often be challenging to see or to acknowledge our own good qualities, like as if we're being arrogant or something then. Because this reflection on our own good qualities is not at all about arrogance. It's really about cultivating wholesomeness and cultivating this goodness in ourselves. So and then the metta practice is actually a progression from very easy beings to slightly more difficult beings. The formal practice, as it's being taught in the discourses, or not in the discourses, but in the commentaries. And you can also try that yourself, like try a slightly more difficult being, a more complex being, and see if there can be, if you can see some goodness in them, maybe an irritating colleague or someone in the public eye that you feel strongly about, that you can see like, oh, maybe there are some good qualities. Maybe they have family members that love them. So there must be something good, right, there. And so if it's too difficult, then just go back to an easier being until you're ready to take on the more difficult beings. But these kind of exercises can really help to gain kind of a different perspective. Some people that, you know, seeing good things that you haven't seen before. And like, especially with people you actually interact with in your life, like colleagues, or neighbors, or, you know, that you might feel aversive towards. If you start to see the goodness, it can really change your relationship with them. If you change, they're going to change. And so that's a little bit about kindness or goodwill. The third and the last wise intention is compassion. And compassion actually arises when we are faced with suffering. So both metta and compassion or karuna are two of the four Brahma-viharas, so the divine abodes. And those are four qualities of heart-mind that that are very wholesome and that we can cultivate actively. And so metta is kind of arises in social, normal kind of social situations. And karuna is actually, it's kind of the response that might arise when suffering is present. So if there's no suffering present, then there's no need for compassion. Then there's just metta, for example. So each Brahma-vihara kind of arises in different situations. And so the experience of compassion is actually loving and caring and warm, and can have this also this wish to alleviate suffering. So compassion is very different from like pity, or kind of sometimes what you sometimes have when your friend is going through some really difficult time and you kind of really feel really hurting in your heart. That's then not compassion. There might be some compassion flavor to, you know, next to it, but the hurting, if you're hurting with someone else, you're actually hurting yourself. So actual compassion is a wholesome and positive state of heart mind. And so it's kind of a high bar though for most people to feel pure compassion that's not at all like influenced by any of that hurt that we might feel. Also, when we see the difficult things in the world, our heart starts to hurt, but there might also be compassion. So it's usually a mixed bag of pure, or kind of the more like the Buddha's teachings would be called compassion, and the hurt or the pain or the more suffering aspect of it. And so don't be like discouraged if you don't feel this pure compassion that I'm talking about, because it's going to be like this journey towards that. It's not going to be right away that we can feel this in a pure way. And so often when compassion arises is that we want to alleviate the suffering. So it has this active component. And this alleviating of suffering is not because we want to get rid of the pain. It's because we genuinely wish for the other being to be well, wish for the other to not suffer. And it can also be directed towards ourselves, the wish for ourselves to not suffer. Compassion can be directed towards self as well. And sometimes it can actually not be so appropriate or even possible to jump into action. Like if there's some disaster on the other side of the world, it's going to be hard to jump into action, or maybe you can offer a donation or something, but you can't probably fly out there. It's probably not very practical to fly out there and start helping. And so sometimes compassion just is this feeling of not wanting the others to suffer on the other side of the world. Not, you know, feeling this, really this care for other beings. And sometimes it can be like inappropriate, like if one animal eats another animal or catches another animal, like you might want to help the animal that's being caught. Like a while ago I saw a fox running through the yard with a squirrel in his mouth. Yeah, and yeah, lots of compassion for the squirrel, but maybe there was also some joy for the fox because they can eat, right? They need to eat meat, else they can survive. So it's really mixed, and it's probably not very appropriate for me to try to save the squirrel from the fox's mouth. So, you know, sometimes it's not appropriate to act on our compassion. And so the same for this intention is, as I was speaking about with the intention for non-ill will, the Buddha describes this intention as harmlessness. So I also want to point out that here we can see that we don't have to have this full-blown compassion in our hearts. As long as there is not an intention to harm, there's already this intention, the wise intention of harmlessness present. And so I like that because this also lowers the bar for the wise intention around harmlessness. And it might make it a little bit more achievable in our daily life, in our day-to-day encounters. Like if you, you know, if you see the fox running with a squirrel in the mouth, then you at least don't have an intention to harm in any way, but there might be this whole other mixed bag of feelings, but there's no intention to harm any of the fox or the squirrel. And so there's also a compassion meditation in the scriptures. And so also the compassion meditation uses phrases directed to these different types of beings. And the easiest being for compassion is a dear being who experiences some suffering, some difficulty in their lives. That's considered the most easy being. But you can use any being that feels easy to you to feel compassion towards, of course. And so a phrase could be, may you be free from suffering. May you be, like some of the metta phrases are actually more compassion phrases. May you be healthy could be maybe a compassion phrase as well, especially if someone is hurting or have some health issues going on. And so these are two of the three wise intentions. I want to wrap up this part, this part two of the series on wise intention with some more general reflections on wise intentions. Because I like something that Gregory Kramer writes about. He wrote this book, A Whole Life Path, which is a very thorough book on the Eightfold Path. And He actually writes about three time frames for intentions. And so the first time frame is called momentary intentions. And so this is a type of intention that is present before each moment in our lives, before each thought, before each action, each movement of the body, anything. What we are experiencing is being preceded by an intention. Even breathing, for example, is preceded by an intention. So often we don't really recognize this level of intention. And this level of intention is is automatic and conditioned. So we might not have always have full control over it. We can take control, like I can take control to move my hand right now. But often we move automatically, we blink automatically, we walk automatically, which is great because else it would take a lot of effort to do everything. So this is one level of intentions, these momentary intentions. And the interesting thing is through our meditation, if we start to settle in more into our meditation, we can actually start to notice some of those. One way I like it to start with is, for example, with the walking practice, to start to have the intention to start noticing the intention to start walking, or to when you lift the foot or when you place it, to feel, oh wait, there's actually a little this moment of about to lift the foot, about to walk, about to, this about to moment. And then the second level that Gregory talks about is the episodic intention. And these are intentions that encompass a broader episode of time or a specific project, or could be like coming here tonight is an intention to come here or to join online. Or an intention to call a friend, or an intention to go to college to study for 4 years, or you know, whatever it is. It could be like, you know, it could be years, it could be like an evening, could be like a 30-minute phone call, whatever it is. So these are episodic intentions. And during such an episode, there can be many sub-intentions. Wholesome or unwholesome. If you're going to college, there are lots of sub-intentions, like, you know, buying your books and going to the lecture and whatever, you know. And so then the last level, a third level of intention that Gregory Kramer describes is what's called overarching intentions. And he talks about this as the overall direction of your life. And so a very Buddhist example would be to have an overarching direction for your life to attain awakening. Could be a very Buddhist intention. Or maybe for you, it's more of like something like having a good life, or a life based on kindness and compassion, or, you know, whatever it is. If each of us, it will be something different. And it's very worthwhile to tune into that. What is actually your overarching intention for your life? And maybe it changes over time. And so I think that's a really useful way to look at intentions. These momentary intentions, these episodic intentions, and the overarching intentions. And so maybe we can do just a short little exercise on those types of intentions. So maybe just a little reflection. And to do that, we can maybe just close our eyes. You don't have to sit a specific way, whatever you feel like. Just kind of close your eyes and then notice your body sitting here, tuning into that, landing in the moment again. Maybe taking a deeper breath. And then tune into the first level of intention. Maybe there's a slight intention to move something, like you feel like one of your limbs is uncomfortable and there's this little intention, even though you don't act on it. This I was about to, this feeling of, oh, I need to do something. Maybe the intention to listen to the sounds, or the intention to breathe. And so these are very subtle. And so no worries if you are not aware of this level of intention. And then we can tune into the second level of intention. Maybe you can remind yourself, what was your intention in coming here tonight or in joining online tonight? And maybe you can also see that while you were coming here, while you are here, that there were many different other intentions that happened. Intention to get into your car or to turn on the computer. Intention to open the door. Intention to sit. Intention to move, whatever it was. And then tune into the third level of intention. What is the overarching intention for your life? Maybe you have more than one intention for your life. Maybe you don't even know for sure and you want to sit with this a little longer, maybe the later time. And if you do, just let that intention kind of resonate through the body. Let it fully in. Maybe you can really kind of let it sink in and feel it in your cells. There could even be a certain phrase that goes with it, like a metta phrase that you want to offer to yourself or just into the universe, so to speak. We can let go of the practice, noticing the body again, body touching the earth through the floor or the bench or the chair or the cushion. Thank you. And then I'd like to end with a quote from the Buddha. And the first part of this quote I've used many times, so you've heard it maybe before. I'll offer the rest of the quote as well, what he says after this. Whatever one frequently thinks and ponders upon, that will become the inclination of the mind. That's the part I use a lot. And then the Buddha continues. If one frequently thinks and ponders upon thoughts of renunciation, then one's mind inclines to thoughts of renunciation. If one frequently thinks and ponders upon thoughts of goodwill, then one's mind inclines toward thoughts of goodwill. If one frequently thinks and ponders upon thoughts of compassion, then one's mind inclines to thoughts of compassion.